Bart Roselli. We're Jersey tomatoes.
We are Jersey tomatoes. Yes.
It's very nice to speak with a fellow Garden Stater. And it's nice to see you. You even went to college in my backyard. Ryder. You went to Ryder, right?
I went to Ryder for my undergrad, the Princeton of down the street. I went after college and moved to South Jersey. Couldn't find a good job at that time, ironically enough. So I was like, oh, what's the next best thing? Go back to graduate school. So I went to Temple and lived in South Jersey there and kind of started my marketing career doing some internships, which are a nice slice of humble pie after you have a graduate degree. You're like, I need to start paying off loans, please. Like, give me a paying job. But yes, then kind of just migrated west. I got the opportunity, knew it was the right thing to do. And within 3 weeks, I was over here at which was originally ROI Media, is now Verita.
All right. Well, I'm going to do a little intro and then we'll come right back and we'll dive into the details. But this is episode 41 of Insider Interviews with me, E.B. Moss. And I always try to give you the insider scoop on the business of media, marketing and advertising, and kind of humanize executives like Bart Roselli, although he's very human. He doesn't need any humanizing. But in a nutshell, he is the SVP Growth for Veritone One, which he'll explain the difference of. And he previously held the role of VP Strategy and VP Media Operations. They can't get rid of him. He keeps rising and rising. So thanks for listening. And if you like what we talk about, feel free to buy me a coffee at www.buymeacoffee.com/mossappeal. Yeah, okay, my commercial work is done here. Bart, back to you. So I wanted to ask, I joked about that in the introduction, but you've been at Veritone One a long time. Can you tell us what the company is and what the two divisions are?
Sure. Veritone is our parent company, which is publicly traded for our artificial intelligence and platform and software. So it was created to help super serve the agency side of the business, which is Veritone One, with recording and transcribing spoken audio so you can make it digestible, search the content, contextual relevance, better on compliance and things to super serve clients. And we sell our technology to all of the key networks to help them with searching and pulling air checks and logs, understanding attribution, and just different things to streamline their workflows and utilize artificial intelligence to basically maximize the efficiency of their business. And it's kind of just skyrocketed from there. And the Veritone One side is specifically the agency focus, which was originally ROI Media.
What a comprehensive company. And you've been there how long now?
Just over 10 years now.
So how has the company evolved as, I guess, marketing has evolved? And where do you see the differences? What had to happen, I guess, from ROI Media to this?
I mean, ROI Media company's was in existence for 15 plus years, dating back to our original first client, LegalZoom. And it was primarily around radio. We were experts in radio and audio. And that was satellite, national radio, local radio endorsements, everything around that. And we just kind of followed the trends. We knew things were changing. We were heavily involved in the outset of podcasts from the very beginning. We said, there's something here. We need to be all over this, understand the ecosystem, help drive the thought leadership for it moving forward, because we knew the on-demand nature of how people basically are starting to live and consume media. Mm-hmm. It was just a home run and we were seeing results. And that's what our goal is to drive for any of our clients. So we go where the results are, and it just started to continue to evolve. So as we became more predominant, expanded out our sphere of influence, we are now in podcast, radio, YouTube, digital streaming like Spotify, Pandora, etc. And then also in social. So the sphere of influence, as it grew for influencers across not just one distribution platform, but now they might have a radio show, they might have a podcast show, they might have YouTube, or they're repurposing on one but distributing on the other, is people consume media differently. And what we all grew up with, like EB, like traditional radio and in your cars, like everything continues to evolve and morph, and people are now, their attention is diversified. So you need to be there at the right place and time, how it works in accordance with your demographic for that target client, and align them with the right channel distribution, because it's not a one size fits all anymore. It used to be radio, print, and TV.
Yeah.
And like, again, digital started to evolve. Now you have tracking elements. You have, now we're moving towards cookie lists types things that you're seeing out there in the space. So the marketing has completely evolved. And I think that's honestly the most exciting thing for somebody such as myself coming in like 16, 17 years ago. It was, hey, you're coming into traditional media that people are experts and have been in for 30, 40 plus years. But now we get to be and start driving the leadership on what is it evolving to? And how do you work in this new environment that has multi-touch points so that you can create that frequency? So when they start to hear it, that 3, 4, 5 times that we're creating that engagement, and we just be able to sure to quantify the value of the channels we're investing in.
Well, a lot of things resonated with me, and you're a man after my own heart talking about that.
Well, we all know that there's first touch, there's last touch. And the one thing we all know is it's not a black and white science. But as you get smarter and we introduce new digital tracking components, we're pretty smart. We understand where the dollars are going. And all a client or business wants to understand is, I spent how much? What's the value am I getting back for it?
Right.
So I can determine what part of my portfolio mix it warrants.
And you also talked about the repetition factor, the cross-platform factor, the repurposing appropriate to the different medium. So you guys, you're kind of the Mac Daddy of all of this. It's great. How's your infrastructure, the back end? I mean, you must have some pretty big servers, my friend.
It's robust. And the analogy of it takes a village is, I think our village is civilization.
Yeah.
At that point. But we have everything from compliance teams, and we're really fortunate because of our parent company's technology background, as we get to tap into them and the brilliant engineers that work on this stuff. So when you need insights quick and fast, but also where most influencer campaigns, people have to request air checks. Like, it's still at this really kind of rudimentary fashion. Like, we get that stuff transcribing into our platform within minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So we know, and from a brand safety perspective nowadays, which we all know is very top of mind with social media, et cetera, is we can help minimize some of that noise, or at least be able to monitor and devise the right type of plan to accommodate.
Yeah. I'm sold on Veritone. Now, I usually like to save the projection questions for the end. So leave us with your future vision, but you guys have evolved so much along the way that I want to know now, and then we'll come back to the now, what your projection is for, you know, what might come out of the pandemic, how we're going to see some big changes in the next few years.
Yeah. I mean, what's interesting is, and you know this, EB, is there's always been this constant trend, like new things. I mean, think about linear TV is starting not to necessarily become obsolete, but it's definitely shifting. Like, you have so many OTT services. If you see one more commercial about Paramount Plus, this bundle, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just trying to target the people and where they're at. And it's just the way people consume media is not what it was 5 years ago, 10 years ago. I mean, it's honestly, like, you and I can say that, like, it's amazing, like, how dramatically different it is. And for, you know, from an excitement perspective for people looking at it in the field, is you're getting into the field, like, on this growth trajectory in terms of change. So you can start to be part of it as, like, hey, if you're in podcasts, YouTube, et cetera, like, these channels are constantly growing and evolving, and you get to grow and evolve with it, as opposed to hearing how it's always been done and kind of passing that tutelage down. You're getting to start to have your hands in the mix and create that. So the pandemic, all it really did was kind of accelerate trends that we were already seeing. So we knew people were consuming podcasts predominantly at home. Well, you get stuck at home for a pandemic, that's going to continue to kind of increase. And I think it goes to, like, the on-demand element is people just, like, our attention spans are less than what they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
You can't capture somebody within 20 to 30 seconds, like, they're going elsewhere. And yeah. Can you do it in accordance with their fast-paced lives? People's schools and education, like how people get their education is very different than what it traditionally used to be. So people get homeschooled, people do stuff online. Like it is the pandemic just said, okay, we already know this is going this direction. Like let's really just light a match to it, push it even further in terms of pouring gasoline on the fire. And now you have the digital media and streaming ecosystem growing by 30%+. Podcast was already in that direction. You now have people consuming YouTube for their podcasts in terms of discovery.
Right, a lot. Uh-huh.
So that was like, what, 18% of people are now kind of consuming and looking through it for YouTube. And that's an interesting stat to think like, oh, it's visual medium, etc. But it's the connection with people from the visual.
And also staying on one screen, I would think, too. You know, we're on our screen so much that it's easy to just go over to YouTube to consume your podcasts or your audio. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. I always like to drop this in, and we're going to talk about the why in a second, but I'm the editor of a publication called The Continuum, which is intended to create conversation around bridging that divide and bringing brand and demand marketing together. And in our last issue, we had Joe Jackman of Jackman Reinvents. It's also a podcast, and everything he had to say about transformation was brilliant. So I encourage you to go there, but the need to, as cliched as it sounds, pivot and not be afraid to embrace change is essential. So It sounds like you guys have really kept up with that. Is there any part of the future that you're afraid of? What do you want to see less of? What do you want to see more of?
That's a great question. The one thing is change is inevitable. We 100% know that. If you're reactive, you're losing. So We always say, like, if you're reading stuff in the trades, you're behind, Which means you're not driving it forward. You're reacting. And if you're reacting, you're losing, whether it's share of voice, whether it's creative messaging, things of that nature. So we pride ourselves in kind of pushing that envelope forward. And sure, like, I think with just even interacting with clients, it's definitely changed in the last 5 years where we were talking about podcasts 5-6 years ago.
Right.
People were like, podcasts, interesting, weird. But now people are coming to us and say, we want to be in podcasts. Like the buzz term is out there. Everyone knows about it. And they're like, but I know nothing about it. Like, tell us how to do it. And then When they come in, they're like so overwhelmed by how big it is, number one, because it's not capped by affiliate distribution, things of that nature that other traditionals might be. But also understanding like, wow, it seems very simple, but it's also like, how the heck do you navigate hundreds of thousands of shows? We all know that not all of them are monetizable, but you know, we're buying 30,000 unique shows on a monthly basis, and that number's obsolete every single week.
Wow, wow, wow. When you put it that way. And so with your big giant servers, you're able to help them navigate and identify. How do you advise your clients on the proper place to put their message?
That is like rule number one, where I said, if we didn't have our technology, like that's, we talk about fishing in the pond, like This is the ocean. So When they're coming in, because we have our Veritone Performance Index, so it takes all of our data, like the hundreds of millions of dollars that we have in the data, Aggregates it to a variance to goal based on like demographics. So if a client comes in and says, hey, I want to target females 25 to 44, we can pull up targeting based off of that. We can go, okay, what are the types of shows that have been hitting performance metrics for D2C type companies? So we know that the audience is engaged. But not only just that, it's understanding the growth trajectory of shows, because we all know shows can start out with 5,000 in the year to 100,000. And where does it start to see a point of diminishing returns? And then at that point, do you adjust your strategy in terms of, does it become top of the funnel brand, 5 to 10-ish% of your budget? Or is there a way to strategically flight the media differently to account for that? Because you still want to be in the shows that have, you don't want them to get huge and then you just exit stage left. But how do you evolve your strategy so that you're not just taking a one-size-fits-all approach? So the data helps us guide that. So when we put stuff on a plan, we know that these are working for our direct response clients in a variety of different verticals. We know the audience is engaged. We know they have money because they're responding and purchasing things on a heavy subscription or heavy return on, you know, ad spend model.
Right.
And we can do it with confidence. And then as you start to grow, then you can start taking advantage of new shows, which sure brings some risk, but we also kind of classify it as an undervalued stock.
Embracing change also.
Embracing change. But if you get in a show and it works and it grows,
right,
you get to ride that growth. And that's where the magic really happens.
So again, you hit on a couple of things. I'm hoping that my little reptilian brain will remember what to come back to. But it reminds me the story about being able to project a show that might take off. That's fascinating to me because that seems like the secret sauce that everybody wants. And I think back about the old story now, old like 7 years ago, of Serial, the first like really big podcast to hit it, and how they sold sponsorship at such a low CPM because they didn't have any idea that it would take off like it did. And they locked in those contracts and they were embedded ads because we didn't have digital ad insertion at the time. And so those companies like, what was it, Squarespace or Mack Weldon, whoever got in early, oh my gosh, they ran to the bank. They were embedded in that show for perpetuity. So can you explain, you'll do a better job than I will, the difference between embedded and digitally ad inserted content or ads?
Sure. So the industry was built on those embedded ads, which do live in perpetuity, which really helps classify the audio on demand element, where obviously it is more aligned that delayed response for things that are not topical, like news or certain sports, because something may not be super relevant 6 months from now, but we'll get orders from 6, 9, 12 months prior. We might not be on a show and we'll still get an order coming through. So people are still engaging with that content, which is powerful because as we know with radio and things like, you have to hit them at least 3 times for them to engage. But once it's gone, where does it go? Like if you're not right there with them, hitting them at that time, that engagement isn't there. Now, it doesn't discount the value of radio because we know it's still the largest reach medium out there. Mm-hmm. It's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. It's been there from the beginning. It'll be there in the end. But it helps you look at podcasts in a different way. So embedded, and nowadays it started to, the networks are looking at how do they monetize every single impression. So like Serial is, they had the embedded ads, but now they sell back catalog.
Right.
So you can go back and listen to other shows, but you
get
can't
fresh
do that.
Ads.
You get fresh ads, you get things kind of rotating in, where embedded is not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. That's where the D2C universe helped build podcasts with that because it works and because you can have response coming in after the ads run longer out. Digital ad insertion technology allows shows that can either do back catalog, upfront catalog. You can insert ads at different spots of the show. It also helps from like a production perspective, which you can probably speak to more than I can, EB, but like digital ad insertion gives you the ability to go in and out. So it kind of treats it almost like radio in terms of you're listening to it and you're that impression. And once it's gone, it's gone. But then you have to devise different tactics in terms of share voice. What's your frequency? Is there something you're trying to go at? So you kind of have this frequency share voice model, but particularly going into Q4 right now, this is where digital ad insertion becomes very beneficial because you have Black Friday, Cyber Monday, big, huge promotional pushes by clients, and they can't wait 4 or 5 weeks for the response to kind of come in way embedded ads typically drive response. And you might want to heavy up in a specific time frame because once that promotion's done, it's over. So digital ad insertion is kind of the inverse of embedded, but it gives you more of a tactical approach and the networks are adopting it. And it also is going to help with psychographic qualitative targeting as people get more of that first party data. It just starts to build campaigns that the brand side definitely appeals to because in the end, it's still not one universal standard of tracking, like a downloader impression. It's still not there. IAB has done a great job with getting it to that 24-hour look back window, whatever, and it'll continue to evolve, but it's still not standardized. So until it's standardized, you still look at things as apples, oranges, and grapefruits a little bit.
Yeah.
So if you don't have a database to reference, a $7 CPM might be like, oh, that sounds really appealing, but we'll tell you, like, we might want to pay $25 for this one because this audience responds. CPM is directional from that perspective.
So is there a range, though, that's the first thing that people will ask? Well, how much does it cost? Is there a typical CPM range?
Yeah, there is. And I think if you think about embedded, is it's kind of lived in the $20 to $30 range for shows for quite some time. Now, the shows that are more of a niche target, like tech or certain things, they're going to be higher CPMs just because the audience is smaller. But that's a highly qualified audience.
Quality over quantity.
Exactly, that you're going after. Where dynamic ad insertion is, the industry is starting to realize what we already knew is there's a different valuation for it.
Yeah.
In terms of, is the host actually doing the ad? That's a huge difference in terms, is it a, versus a producer reading it? The number of ads that are in rotation, the share of voice you're doing. So dynamic ad insertion, we always find typically, again, can't say it universally, but it's going to be a lower CPM. They should be living in around the $15 range, but it also depends on the show, the talent, the everything obviously is very unique that from that perspective, but embedded should always typically be fetching that because you have the ability for that drag element or latency. But dynamic ad insertion will be a little bit cheaper. However, that's not the case with really big, key high-profile shows with celebrities, etc. So it just depends on the shows you're targeting.
Like, you know, the most inexpensive way to be ingratiated with a podcast host? BuyMeACoffee.com/MossAppeal. I've gotten two cups of coffee at $5 a pop so far. Otherwise, this is, as we say, a lost leader, my friends. Just saying, Bart. Okay. But if we go back, like just in a sort of almost layperson way, and again, putting on the lens or looking at it through the lens of the continuum, it feels like embedded ads are closest to what we would call brand or awareness marketing. You know, a little bit more generic, a little bit more of the long tail kind of build, not time locked, and then digitally ad inserted ads. Well, they should still have excellent creative and can speak to brand marketing, feel a little bit more like the performance or demand side, because there is a little bit more instant trackability and often has an offer and a call to action associated with it more so. That's the way I'm looking at it anyway. Okay.
Yeah. You could argue both sides, right?
Like, you'll say yes.
It's definitely a little bit of everything. It's, yeah.
Okay. All right. I was trying to like bring it back to the continuum. So where do you stand on the brand and demand continuum when you are advising clients the awareness and performance goal?
The first thing we do, and it sounds silly, Evie, but the first thing you do is you have to understand what the client's goals are. Like how you would target a Coke versus how you're going to target at somebody that just got seed round A. Very different. Very different, right? Embedded ads typically have been the better performers from that perspective. But there's also clients that they want to test a lot of creative, which is extremely beneficial, as you can speak to that. And you want to understand what's the right messaging. Well, embedded doesn't really afford you that creative test mentality, because while it's extremely powerful and integrated with the content and the influencers giving that endorsement, you're running copy points and things that are different, where a produced ad or a scripted ad is very different. So it depends on what the client's goals are. Typically, when they're coming in, they usually have to say, like, I need some kind of return to validate the channel. So typically they're coming in with that. But a lot of it also depends on if they are always constantly running offers that change and they're trying to do a lot of that testing. Well, if you're running an embedded ad, you can't swap those out. Nor are you going to want to strip them out. So you might have an offer that's living out in some form of perpetuity that might be obsolete. So then maybe the dynamic ad insertion approach is, well, once it runs, and then it's out there outside of the universe. So typically, clients will come in focusing on embedded, but if they have holiday promotion, seasonality, we're absolutely going to use. So this ecosystem is going to work synergistically together. It's going to be impossible to just do one or the other. And frankly, from a beneficial perspective, you're going to want to do both. And clients just need to determine is, when can they start to validate that top of the funnel 10, 15% of their budget that may not tie directly to, I spent this much and it drove this much, but it's aiding search. It's aiding branded search, aided search, things of that nature. So, and then that helps the overall pie of what they're trying to do with their transactional based buys. So That's probably the long-winded, indirect way of answering it, but it's definitely something that with the advancement of DAI, pixel tracking, et cetera, it's not going away. It's always going to be there. It's just going to be what makes the right sense for client A versus client B versus client C.
Very Switzerland of, no, very logical of you. I liked your answer. Let's put it that way. And you also gave some great answers in a June episode of Heather Osgood's podcast called Podcast Advertising Playbook. So while I would encourage you to play this episode back, I know I'm going to have to about four times for it to sink in. You can also listen to Bart on that episode with Heather. She's one of my favorite people from True Native Advertising as well. But that's what happens when you get a smart guy in the room who knows how to talk the talk. So I do want to sort of talk about the other aspects of what you are working on, what you're advising clients on. And as teased at the beginning, I'd love to talk about what Marvel AI is up to.
Sure. I'll dovetail into Marvel. So right now, speaking to what we just talked about, which is the diversity and basically how people are consuming media is changing. Mm-hmm. And you need to be everywhere. So you can't just buy two channels and cross your fingers and have a nice day. And I think Facebook and certain platforms have motivated things because it's always been surprising how many clients put all their eggs in that basket for an ecosystem they don't control. So there's not to say that's not valuable. Like everybody knows that's Facebook marketing's worked extremely well.
Yep.
It's just how do you diversify your portfolio? So I'm focusing with our team on is how when clients come in and their goals are XYZ is how do we test multiple channels from a cross-channel attribution element and make sure that we're not just thinking myopically, mm-hmm. knowing that customer may, that person who they're trying to hit, they might hear the podcast at once, but then we need to hit them when they're listening to Spotify, Pandora, iHeart, et cetera, or they also consume on YouTube. And I think what has been the most exciting to see from a data point perspective is everyone used to always think like, oh, the podcast people don't have money. Completely wrong. Mm-hmm. There's genres like the gaming community, which I will fully admit myself was 10 years ago. If you would have said like, hey, that's a high quality, rich customer.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, it's gaming. I don't know. It doesn't make sense. You'd be surprised. I have eaten crow on that one. They are a phenomenal audience from that perspective and extremely loyal. Kind of focusing on the right partners, but the biggest thing is building a sphere of influence. Mm-hmm. So not thinking just one channel focus. And then when you start to layer additional channels, just like BB is like, it was the old adage of 1 + 1 = 3. So yeah. How does 1 + 1 + 1 = 7? Like, how do we create that aiding retention? And not only to build the audience, but you also want to create chatter for a brand from a DTC perspective, because what do people do? Like if your friend told you to buy something, you're going to listen to them. Mm-hmm. So that's the power of influencer marketing. But if that influencer drives that person to respond and then they're recommending something to somebody else because they heard it on YouTube and that's how they consume their media.
Yep.
There's the win. So from that to Marvel AI, which is amazing technology,
yes.
is going to a synthetic voice. So creating a person's voice. So let's say you take my voice coming from the Northeast.
From Jersey. Enough, the yes, truth.
The Jersey response, which my wife says only comes out when I'm angry. But creating and generating enough audio to run through our technology and then to able to do text-to-speech or speech-to-speech elements. So mm-hmm. somebody else on our team could talk into that from a voice to, a speech-to-speech and spit it out in my voice because there's enough
audio. I'm petrified. I know there's good news, bad news to this, but let's keep going with the good news.
Yeah. So what it also does is those, whether it's celebrity talents, whether it's the voiceovers or people that want their audio and their voice to live on, long after they're gone, but the flexibility and nimbleness to do it not only accelerates return times, but hey, when we do a lot of founder voiceover spots, like they don't have time, they're running a company. Like it's right. hard to get them to record, but if we have this and this model built out where we can text or speech as you speak into it, and spits it out in their voice. You can even apply accents and things. It is unbelievable technology we're starting to use. Yeah.
And also translating into different languages, correct?
Correct.
Translating into different languages.
So I love that.
It's a convenience element, but it's also something that where you can like amplify the power of an influencer or a brand ambassador or a
founder. And increase your diverse messaging and your inclusion.
Yeah. And let's face it, everybody's traveling a little bit more now as we come out of the pandemic, but people's time has always been really difficult to get somebody dedicated in studio. And if you have a huge national campaign running in a lot of local markets, like I have like 3-4 hours every single week to dedicate to tags and things of that nature, where we take that element out and still get the power of it out there. Again, with putting watermarks and protection things and exposed to synthetic voice. And that's the balance of pushing the technology and growing it, but doing it from an ethical perspective to make sure that everyone is aware of what they're engaging with.
Yeah. And I think that approval and watermarking is going to be essential. My last episode, I interviewed Pearl Servat of Visible, and they use, for example, Kevin Bacon as one of their spokespeople. So for them to pay Kevin to sit in the studio, and as we talked about, it's important to have customization and be everywhere. And for him to repeat the message by changing what might need to be 5 words, especially if you're either A/B testing or doing geo-targeted messaging, that's going to cost a lot. But with his approval to allow that synthetic voice to replicate Kevin Bacon for Visible would be quite an asset. And so that is a standalone offer as part of Veritone, a division?
It's offered, yes, as standalone, but we're also providing it to our clients already.
And your creative efforts?
Yeah, so it's done on that perspective. And there's been some interesting engagement. We used DraftKings and Ross Tucker, who's a prominent influencer in the Northeast, and he just doesn't always have the time to kind of do that. So we started running that out there recently, which has seen nothing but success based on the quality of that. So we are offering it as an element to clients, and it's also becoming extremely cost proficient. The more it kind of runs through whatever and can be cheaper than what you might see in other cases. So it becomes efficient from a pricing, but also like a logistical perspective, but then just opens up a world where the goal everybody wants is like to constantly evolve their messaging, whether it's chronologically or telling a story. And if you're limited by certain things, whether it's a talent or ambassador who can't get in the studio, you potentially minimize the growth and evolution of what your brand represents. So this is going to help supercharge that for the clients that are ready to kind of engage there.
So I'll wrap it up with the word that you used just now, growth. What do you think the biggest areas of growth are, both for those who are advertising and those who are facilitating the advertising?
I think the biggest growth is the continued development of tracking. That's from like a selling and a operational perspective. But, you know, the brands have always been hesitant to come in something that's not standardized. So you want them engaging with that and understanding. And I think they're just going, wow, we need to really be a part of this industry. It's a billion plus. It's going to be multi-billion in a few years from that perspective. So how do we think differently outside of just the traditional ways of doing it? So growth from that. But I think the audio landscape, where you're going to be in 5 or 6 channels, people need to think of audio outside of the myopic way of just radio. And it's radio.
100%. Yes.
Streaming. It's podcasts. It's YouTube. And if you're not thinking that way, you're falling behind in terms of who you're in. You're probably missing a large chunk of your potential customer base. So I think the growth projections is just, you're going to see the portfolio continue to diversify, but you're still going to see those key channels. Radio is going to continue to drive the largest reach and still be something that's hard to match, you know, universally. But you can now have brands interact with the right channels. And if you're not thinking of channels plural, then again, you're thinking about audio and your marketing incorrectly, and you're probably missing a large chunk of who would be out there.
Way to bring it full circle. And way to live up to your title, speaking about growth, Bart Roselli, SVP of Growth for Veritone One. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Evie. It was great to connect with another New Jerseyan from that perspective.
I know. And so I'll just wrap it up and say that thanks for listening to Insider Interviews with me, Evie Moss. Lots and lots of great guests. I'm super proud to have people like Bart here, and I hope that you'll listen to my back catalog. And Bart, what am I going to tell them? buymeacoffee.com/mossappeal.
Multiple coffees.
If you're happy, I'm happy with the content. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Well, I hope you got some good insider scoop from this episode of Insider Interviews with me, E.B. Moss. If you enjoyed this content, please feel free to buy me a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/mossappeal. And I hope you'll follow Insider Interviews on social media and let me know if you have a question or a suggestion for a next stellar guest in media, marketing, and advertising. Speaking of stellar, my theme music was composed and performed by the incomparable Grammy-winning John Clayton. If I can help you with your company's podcast, please find me at mossappeal.com. Thanks again for listening.